You know you can tell it's summer when police departments all across the country announce their summer crime reduction programs. Indianapolis is no exception. Chief of Police Rick Height is here in the house. Chief, how you doing?
Amos, how are you? Hi to the family.
All right, so let's walk down some of this stuff because one of them have to do with cops out on the street, and you're doing several things. One, SWAT team members are going to be on the street 24/7. I thought SWAT only came out if somebody was barricaded in a house and you're trying to get them out, and then it's like the TV show. The big truck shows up and all the SWAT people come out. Why are you going to have SWAT people out on the streets when there's no SWAT thing going on?
Well, first of all, we want to thank the mayor and city council and the director for being able to fund 60 new police officers. What we have, Amos, is a situation where any has never had, if only one other time in history, a full-time SWAT team. Back in 2001, they had to be disbanded. It's time for us to recognize that some of our issues and challenges on the street, in order to save lives and change conditions in our community, requires our SWAT team to be available on a moment's notice in the community. And already they have shown paid dividends in terms of response times and freeing up our officers to handle calls, 911 calls, runs, and more efficiently. And the idea of giving police officers discretionary time so they don't have to do the warrants, they don't have to do the high-risk entries, and protecting them to a large extent. Because, let's face it, when police are in trouble, it's the SWAT team who we call. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we have challenges in our community. We've had 30 police action shootings since September. And actually, 8 officers shot. So, yeah, the risk factors have gone up in the community, and we want to make sure our officers and the community are safeguarded.
All right. So, the other thing that I noticed of this one is your tactical active patrols, which normally occurs every summer, wherever the hot spots are, the tac guys go there and ladies go there and take care of business there. I noticed traffic for the first time. Mm-hmm. When you say traffic, is it mean patrolling, quit speeding? Is it patrolling, you know, quit weaving across the double yellow line? Is it making sure there's enough officers going to be downtown next Friday to make sure people don't spend 3 hours trying to get home after the fireworks? What does traffic mean?
Well, traffic means basically looking at how historically we've done these summer initiatives. And benefits from those initiatives have taught us a couple things, one of which, of the 1,300 or so people were arrested and the guns, the 200 guns we got off the street, it told us that we were looking at the right people, but we had more of a shotgun effect, and we're kind of like assessing what we thought the threat level was and where people actually were with guns. Well, now we've been able to pinpoint it more effectively, and data-driven and of course, intelligent-led, it's taught us that we can make car stops in the right neighborhoods, and we started to get information about who's behind the wheel of the car, the types of guns and drugs that are found in the car, and it's been effective. Again, we're not just looking for any and everybody. I think it's important to note that we have identified, based on the fine work the community has done in contacting us on 262 TIPS, we're able to stop the right cars in the right neighborhoods during the right time and get the right information.
You all are going to be using the criminal tracking unit to ID, monitor, track, and gather information about the known criminals, working with strategic investigations. That's also some of it, keeping your eye on the potential bad guys.
Back to what we talked about when I first got here, you gave me the demographics of what we're looking for in our communities. And what we found is when we did the analyzation of those arrested, there are quite a few who were, quite frankly, released for whatever reason back to society and without any further intervention, for lack of a better term. So we decided that when we looked at those individuals, we looked at their history. Some of them had very violent histories. Mm-hmm. So there was no service plan. Right. We had a couple of ideas, one of which parole and probation has teamed up with us. And Colonel Chief Mahone had a great idea, and when he was the commander of Northwest, he started a project where he worked with parole and probation. Well, we expanded that citywide where we have parole and probation assisting us, looking at those individuals who have criminal career histories and saying, listen, this is time for you to get out of the game. But at the same time, we've been able to get intelligence on them in terms of what they're doing, who they're actually involved with in criminal enterprise, and tracking them and their progress or the lack of progress and being able to do it, hopefully get them to turn it around. But at the same time, we have to talk about stiff prosecution for violent offenders. We will.
You also talked about in the summer plan highlights, it was the mayor, you, and the public safety director, something called community impact meetings. It says when acts of violence are committed to help the healing process, IMPD will set up a meeting in the affected neighborhood within 72 hours of the incident. Is this new?
Yes, it's something I brought to the table because I found that people were having challenges when violent acts occurred. And we often have not explained to them what took place. Mm-hmm. They've heard it through the rumor mill, how their loved one may have been shot or killed. They may have heard it through the rumor mill about who were the potential suspects, et cetera, et cetera. What we try to do is go there and basically have a conversation about not so much about the crime itself, but the impact on the community. Yes, we had a violent incident, but how are you doing? How are you coping with that? How is the community holding up? What are the safety factors? We know people want to feel safe and secure. They want to feel that they have to be able to ventilate something. A lot of times they want to vent what they're feeling and have to be validated. But we also have to give them a sense of preparation, what they can prepare for as they go to the funeral, for the courts, or anything else that's in the neighborhood of concern of theirs. We're going out there to show them we care.
We've not addressed this in the interviews that we've had, and people have brought this to my attention. And it's a part, and you've been a police officer for a long time, so you have been to homicide scenes, both where the homicide is inside a building and where it's outside. And I know the homicides that have occurred outside the building, there have been situations where the neighborhood got very tense because the deceased is out there exposed and people would like that individual covered up with a sense of decency, but there's an investigation that has to occur before that happens. Can you walk the community through what is the procedure? In other words, you guys come up on a homicide, the victim, whether they're inside a building or outside, is there a reason why the deceased cannot be covered up before the crime lab people come and the coroner folk and the folks that take the pictures for investigation and all of that? Because I know you've been out at some of those outdoor scenes and you've heard the emotion from the community.
What we're trying to do, the trouble trains of thought, and it's evolved over the years in terms of crime scene preservation. As you know, our crime scenes have gotten larger for that reason. We want to lessen the impact of trauma. We hate to have anyone. I mean, your life doesn't matter. We don't want to see anyone, a loved one, laying in the street in the rain, in the snow, or whatever the case may be, any longer than we have to. But we have to preserve the crime scene in order to do a couple things. Most importantly, protect it because it is evidentiary. Right. There's evidence there of a crime committed, and we want to capture the person who did it. And in having the crime scene tape allows us to the crime scene area is to be somewhat contained. We want to make sure no one steps over shell casings, no one steps on potential evidence,
footprints and stuff,
DNA contamination. But also in looking at how we cover the body, sometimes if we're not careful, then there's transference of evidence even in that respect. So we have to make sure that we talk about that in more in detail with the medical examiners. But, yeah, I think it's important for us to widen our as you see,
the perimeter. Is that
exactly where I'm going? The crime scene tape and the perimeter has to be widened a lot of time because we want to lessen the impact of seeing someone laying there for hours.
But when the crime occurs inside a structure, that same uncoveredness occurs inside the structure because obviously the neighbors aren't inside.
Sure.
So, because some of them, I think, well, if that person was inside, they would do that. Same procedure happens if it's inside a building.
Exactly. We don't touch the until the medical examiner gets there because, again, we're talking about evidence. The body, the deceased, it becomes evidentiary.
Is there a reason, I know the crime scene tape is out there, why you can't have a second, maybe this has been discussed, a second perimeter where instead of the yellow crime tape, you put up like a 2 to 3 foot tall scrim or screen? So that you box it in so you can't kind of – you see what I'm saying?
Well, these are things – it's funny you mentioned because they had a couple of recent cases where that was discussed as to what else can we do to lessen the trauma. Because what we're finding is it's reoccurring trauma in our community is creating a havoc. It's a form of community PTSD when you continually see people being shot and or hurt in our community. Right. We want to lessen that trauma. I think you're right in the sense that we need to consider other options. We've even done things as block situations with cars.
Yeah.
We try to position our vehicles in some cases to lessen that trauma. Yeah, because that's someone's loved one, and we want to make – we're sensitive to that, and that's important to note.
All right, let me start with the phones. And Anonymous, hi there. Hello.
How you doing, Amos?
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Yes, I have an issue. I'm gonna call the police twice on a guy. He lives in this house and he don't own it. And this is the second time I called the police. I called the police yesterday because I took a picture of him stealing wires off this house, off the cable line, and they won't never do nothing. The first time I called him, I told him he living there. He took the board off the house. It's an abandoned house. He gave the police something that wrote out, and the police looked at it, and knowing it wasn't no receipt saying he paid his first month of rent there, and they didn't do nothing. So just yesterday, well, I caught him, took a picture of him stealing wire, and the police seen it. And he didn't go over there to the house and investigate it. And he just gave me a card and told me, and the neighbors over there is afraid of him. They said cars be coming there at midnight. There's a dope house around there somewhere in that neighborhood. And then he'd be transferring dope and say 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, it'd be brand new cars and young ladies coming in and out of that empty abandoned house. I called the city. They didn't come out there, board of health. They didn't come out there and board the house up like they said they were going to do. The neighbors want to get him out of there because he's been threatening the people down the street and stuff like that.
Sounds like ongoing case everywhere that we're looking into, sir. Can you do us a favor and just hold on? We'll take your information offline. I don't want you to go too far into more detail. I don't want to maintain your anonymity. But if you don't mind, we'll take your information.
All right. So, Anonymous, okay. I want you to hold on and give Chris your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, and that will be given directly to Chief Height. And you can expect a call from one of the men and women of law enforcement privately to find out more information, okay?
Okay.
All right. So while he does that, let me talk to Imhotep at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, how's your name?
Fine.
How you doing, Chief Height?
Hello, sir.
All right. I got just three-pronged questions here. I'll make them real quick. Number one is that I know from studying criminology myself, I know from keeping my ear to the street, that there are some large drug dealers that walk around this city and have never been touched. What we see on TV is low-level offenders. I can go back to long before the administration, Amos would know, when Mayor Golson was here, Golson used to have the drug stops. And in their research, they found that those drug stops, that they were only getting low-level dealers and users. You never got up the chain of command. Getting El Chapo from the federal government a few weeks ago or whatever, that was probably a lucky thing there. But we know good and well that there are a large number of people who traffic a lot of drugs from the middle up in the chain, and we never see them getting busted. Number two is that my parents, these a lot of older blacks, favor stop and frisk. They believe anybody should just be pulled over. I'm not. My mother's an attorney. I believe in the Fourth Amendment. I believe you should have a probable cause, but they don't feel that way. I want to know how you feel about that, because we know with the research done from the New York Times in New York, that most of the people stopped. 650,000 were stopped last year. Out of that 650,000, 89% were black and Latino. Out of that 89% that were black and Latino, 90% were never charged with a crime. So what do you feel about that? And then third of all...
Hold on. He's going to number three. He's got three-part question.
He said two, he's going to the third one. Okay.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. And then we know from the New York Times study again. I'm a student. I do research.
Okay.
We know from the New York Times study again that a lot of the illegal guns that are coming on the streets are coming from the factory or from gun dealers. We never see these busts going on. What and how can you guys get into that, which will probably curb the problem, because those guys are not going in the store buying them like me, a law-abiding citizen has. And I'll take your comments off the air.
All right. Appreciate it. First of all, the large drug, can we get some of them big drug, the ones that they are bringing 747s full of drugs
well,
up in here.
Let me just be very clear. Just this year alone, Amos, we've taken over $4 million, and it's seized over 200 or 300 kilos of various types of methamphetamine, heroin, etc. We're not focused on low-hanging fruit. Our job is to look at how we really attack this problem from the top down. We would love to be able to look at those high-end offenders and deal with them and get the drugs off the street, which we have. We have dried up a lot of the drug trafficking in some areas. The challenge is for us is convictions, making sure we get convictions for those crimes, and particularly around gun crime. What you will find in the high-level dealers, and I've dealt with a drug dealer for a number of years, and when I was on the East Coast, he sold $100 million worth of drugs. He was the number one kingpin. He was the stories The Wire were written about. Mm-hmm. I understand that because I bought dope, and I worked drug cases.
Yeah.
Let me be very clear, as a police officer, and bought undercover drugs, and I understand how it works. But I also noticed that those who are deeply involved are not involved in violent crime. So what we tried to do is doing between wiretaps and our investigative resources and intel, it spiraled down. Instead of working the way up, that's the old way of doing things. You never got past because of the Kingpin Act and a lot of other reasons. The guys in the top tier, the guys in the lower tier are not always exposed to all the information. We worked our way, and Indy worked from the top down to build cases. And we got in some conspiracy cases, and we're taking some cases federally. The challenge is when we come down to the guy with the gun on the street, it's the low-level deal. And we'd be very clear about this. It's the little guy with a couple of rocks in his pocket who are doing a lot of the shootings. So we had not only is it a top-down approach, we have to have a bottom-up approach because we have to go out to those folks who fire guns indiscriminately in the community.
And the illegal drugs and the illegal guns, they're not coming from, you know, people aren't robbing Don's guns every day and taking, you know, boxcar loads of exactly. guns out of there. Is some of this from dealers? Is some of this setting up or straw purchases where legal people purchase the gun and then gives them to the bad guy?
Well, we're in the process now with ATF. We just had a meeting to talk about how these guns are being traced and looking at straw purchases. But a lot of them are coming to our own homes. Well, this is a gun-toting society, and we carry guns. We loan guns. People loan guns. They rent guns. Guns are easy to come by, and particularly in the West. So I'm saying to you that we have to have a message that why do you need, at 21 years of age, a lifetime gun permit? Mm-hmm. I'm not denying you that, but if you're 5'2", 114 pounds, and you're walking around with a Desert Eagle, looking for trouble is going to find you. The other part of it is the
stop and frisk.
I'm against stop and frisk. I come from the East Coast. I dealt with the whole issue in New York. This is not stop and frisk. What we are dealing with is we know who we're after. We're talking about bad guys with guns. And they come out of prison getting back into the game. They get released from courts and they're back in the game. We're going after people who have killed indiscriminately. We're going after people who have taken the lives of 84-year-old grandmothers. We're talking about people who have shot and killed 16-year-old kids, and we know who they are. We're going after bad guys with guns.
239-1310. Back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hi, Amos.
Hi.
Hi, Chief Hite.
Hello, ma'am.
I am calling because I have called several times, number one, about having extra patrol in especially our block here. And they tell me every 5 days I have to call back to continue it. But the last couple of times that I have called within the last month, the first time I sat out on my porch day and night. I did not see not one patrol person coming through. The second time I did see two. And so, you know,
what's happening in the block?
I'm in the Butler, Tarkington area.
Okay.
And there's a lot of drugs in the west and east alleys.
Can I ask you a question? Are you working with the community relations in your district? Or are you part of the block? Or are you part of Crime Watch?
We have a block club. However, there's only three of us senior citizens left in
okay.
this block.
Mm,
and the younger people, you know,
I understand
a couple
now.
Of houses are college kids now.
Yes, ma'am. I understand. Well, let me
ask you this, since you got a couple of college kids on the block, does the Butler police slide through there?
No. I'm telling you, I haven't seen any.
And so you haven't seen the Chief Heights people, IPMPD, or the Butler
last
police?
Time, within the last month, the first time I called, we didn't see anyone. The second time I called, I saw two patrol cars come through.
Have they ever referred you to the community affairs officer of the North District?
No, they didn't. They just tell me call in 5 days.
Tell you to call every 5 days?
No, that's not acceptable.
Yeah,
what we want to do is we're going to do a couple of things, man. We're going to do an assessment of where you are and then figure out what community association is there. Are you a Crime Watch member?
Well, our block is, we have Crime Watch. Yeah, we're Crime Watch block.
Okay. Because information.
But it also sounds like there may not be that many people working.
Right. Well, I'm just trying to connect her to the neighboring communities. But we'll take our information because, again, I think you're right. The community affairs and making sure we understand where the threat is in relationship to Butler and our post. I'll be done.
All right. So I tell you what, hold on, Anonymous. And Chris, who you talk to when you call me, will get your name off the air and a number where you can be reached during the day. And the Chiefs folks will follow up with you, okay?
Okay.
All right. That'll also allow me to take a break at 239-1310. The Chief is here. It's After News with Amos after these. All right. Back to the phones with the Chief of Police and Rita. Hi there. Rita?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
Yes. Hello, are you there?
We're right here. What's up?
Okay, I'm absolutely in response to Chief Hite's comment about the police state in New York. I am absolutely for it. If you're not doing anything wrong, stop and frisk me. And I'm saying this in regards to the number of burglaries that have permeated, where I live in Zone 10, which is the 25th and Delaware area, Fall Creek proper and Fall Creek Place area. I've been proactive by going to the district office and speaking with Sergeant Silcox. And basically, it appears that there is nothing that can be done. His statement was, we work as efficiently as we can with the information that we have. Well, you're not in burglaries. It's inherent in burglaries that there aren't any leads or suspects. So how can you change this process? Because people are moving. They're putting their homes up for sale because of being burglarized.
You said in the press conference yesterday, you, the public safety director, and the mayor, that the robberies are up 3% this year, Chief, and you believe they're being driven by this new run of heroin, that heroin is the new hot drug out there on the street.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to her point, first of all, I wanted to talk to you, ma'am, about the fact that thank you for hanging in there and staying in the neighborhoods, because I think the key is this. We've had to have a campaign through our community conversations on how important it is for us to care about our neighbors, and we have to do neighbor checks and neighbor conversations. There were times when I walked in neighborhoods where people didn't know the next-door neighbor. They didn't know who lived in the house. They don't know which car belonged to the house. They kind of like go in, lock the door, and go about their business. What we're trying to encourage people to do is be more of a neighbor and understanding when you see something suspicious, let us know. Because over time, when we stop and do enough field interviews where we actually talk to people about, hey, how you doing? I'm Officer So-and-so. I ride this area. Or do you live in the neighborhood? Have these kind of conversations. We get to know who you are. You get to know who we are. But the challenge is right now, we need intel. We need information about, if this guy's hanging around the neighborhood in the morning, he's sitting on the bus stop, and he looked like he's watching, waiting on the bus, but an hour goes by, he's still sitting there. He could be casing the house. He could be seeing who's watching, who's going to and from the house, and then from the house, and then from the back, he's hanging in the alley, watching who goes to and from to work in the alley. So I think the reality of it is we have to share information with each other at community meetings. We can do it offline or through a source through 262 tips, or email the information, text the information, but we have to find a way to communicate through Crime Watch, any other means necessary to try to find out exactly who are the individuals.
Rita,
in
let me
area.
Ask a question. Is there a formal Fall Creek Place Neighborhood Association?
I live in Fall Creek Place, Fall Creek proper, but we do communicate through Crime Watch and through email. And if you call that a formal association or not, I'm not sure
with this rash of robberies you're talking about, has there been a recent meeting of Crime Watch where Crime Watch asked the commander of the North District or the deputy commander to come out and talk to all y'all?
Well, no, they haven't asked, but we did have a meeting in March. I think it was March 11th. There was a big meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Does there need to?
I mean, nothing. The burglaries have not curtailed. And as I said, I went and personally talked to Sergeant Silcox about this.
It sounds like there needs to be another meeting.
Because the complaints I get out of the Fall Creek community really aren't around burglary as much as there are other types of crime. So I'm a little surprised at that, because we've done a great job of identifying some of the challenges around the burglary. So I don't know if this is new
information. What have you identified around the burglary?
Well, let me help you. There's some things with the people that they asked to do. To take crime surveys, we've actually talked about lighting. We talked about cutting back on trees, on trees and shrubs. We talked about making sure that we do neighbor checks. Again, when people come home at certain times of night, the neighbors look out for them. So there's been a lot of proactive steps taken relative to that. So that issue has, unless there's something recent that happens I'm not aware of, but we will continue to come out and have the conversations because we want to capture whoever's committing the crimes, but we're going to need your help.
Hold on. In response to what you said, there have been some proactive things mm-hmm. done. As a okay. matter of fact, I think there was something on the news last week where a neighbor had a camera up, and so yes. they were able to see who was coming, who came in and came out of her house, and that yes. was on the news.
That's what
we
saying.
Have been proactive. We are yes. doing what we can do, but I was burglarized. Okay, mm-hmm. my next door neighbor was burglarized.
Okay.
They feel like it's a free for all because they go and they steal the mail and just throw it in the mud. Like they can do whatever they want to do. A neighbor was robbed at gunpoint. Her phone was taken. Now, because I think she saw him and was able to identify him, they did catch that guy. But most of these burglaries are burglaries. They're nobody sees what's going on.
Well,
and I understand about being proactive, but what are the police doing? What I understand that they're doing is that if they do have a leader suspect, they focus on those. But most burglaries, there are no leads. There are no suspects.
Well, let me help you, ma'am. Hold on.
You're making great points. Let me the chief respond.
Let me say this to you. You said something very critical, and I think we kind of blew over it. We captured a suspect. It's not uncommon to have a one-man wrecking crew in the community. One suspect can go as high as one burglary to 50 burglaries. So, again, you get a suspect into custody. The question is, how do we tie him to the crime? Serial numbers have to be taken. If someone puts a driver's license number or a number on there, the identifier on the property, we can get it back
to
you.
But if he fences the stuff,
that's why we want numbers on the property okay. they take. Okay. That's why we asked, and the prosecutor did agree. He helped us put a hold on gold. You can't just go to the pawn shop now. You have to wait X number of days now. The reason for that, because it has been a rash of gold burglary and electronic stealing. So when we ask you to put a number, identifying number, a serial number, and write it down for us so we can get it back, we can tie that burglar to that house. But a lot of times we have property we receive, we have no way of knowing where it came from. We got a burglar with 50 different charges. And sometimes they admit that they went for more houses than they get, but we have to be able to prove that. Mm-hmm. But to her point, we have gone out. We have made some changes. We have invited people in to hear about our SEPTEC, how we changed the lighting, how we changed cameras. But at the same time, it's a community issue. A lot of times, that burglar is lurking in that community.
But it's also that she's been in touch with one of your guys. I think you could copy the name down, so I'm sure he's going to follow up with him. I tell you what, Chris, off the air, if she would be so kind as to leave her name and number so that the chief's folks can follow up with her,
as well as
the commander as well. 239-1310, 239-1310. That will allow me to move on to anonymous number three. Hi there.
25th.
Hello. Hey, how you doing?
You're on the air.
How you doing, Chief Hike?
Fine, sir. How are you?
Kind of disappointed with the police department right now.
Well, come on and join us. We're hiring right now. We're looking for a few good men and women. So come on down and join us and help us do something about these problems.
It's a little too late for me, but I'm disappointed in the fact that...
See, we can't make it better for you. What can we do for you?
Had a family member that was attacked by another family member.
Okay.
Female family member was attacked by a male family member. Went to the police station. They made a report, got a case number. The incident title was battery. They took pictures of this female family member who was attacked by the male family member. Detective Thomas was supposed to, matter of fact, he was assigned the case the very next day. Never called. This report was made on 6/10/14. We have not heard from Detective Thomas at all.
Okay. What was the
messages on his voicemail?
Let me ask you this.
To no avail.
Let me ask you this. What does a family member want to do? Does she want to press charges? Does she want this to be mediated? What does she want done with this case?
At the time, she wanted some type of order of protection put in place because this family member,
threatened to come back and finish her off.
Oh.
I mean, at the time, it was pretty hot, and I'm just surprised that this detective did not even follow up with the police report. I mean, we waited 7 days. We waited 3 days before we made a call to try to reach out to him and left a voicemail to no avail. So he didn't call back.
Do we know whether or not did she go down and seek a protection order?
No, she did not.
Okay, that's
when
on.
When we called the Northwest District over there behind Lafayette Square, and I don't know if we was talking to an officer or a civilian, the person we spoke to said, well, they're probably not going to give it to you because usually that only happens in cases of domestic battery. And since they don't live together and they're brother and sister, the court probably wouldn't give it to you. Now that's what.
Smoke just coming out of the chief's. That's not what they're supposed to say. Whether somebody can do that or not, that the citizen has the right to ask for that protection order.
That's not something a police officer would say. That's probably a civilian may have said that. Sir, he's absolutely right. The protection order, she can go down and do that. And in the case with family on family, in a case like that, that is domestic, and that's where the laws of kind of people don't understand. Family, mother, father, son, those are domestic violence incidences. And what we try to do, we take it very seriously. And I'm surprised that there may have been, I'm going to have to look into it, maybe talk to you about whether or not a warrant was already issued.
Anonymous, let me ask you, were you ever given a case number?
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I got the card that the police give you.
So we have a department.
When they write the report down.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay, here's. Okay, here's.
All right.
All right. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to hold on. And Chris is going to talk to you off the air. Give us your name, a phone number where you can be reached during the day, and most important, read him that case number. Okay. And
all
we'll
right.
give that to the chief, because with the case number, that will open up a whole lot of doors.
You know,
all right?
A couple things that we know, the fact the case number says a report was written, but at the same time, a warrant may have been already issued, and they may be looking for the suspect, so we have to talk to him offline.
All right, no, he's going to get that information offline, and they'll talk to you offline. 239-1310, 239-1310, that'll allow me to talk to Skippy. Hi, Skippy.
Hey, Amos, how you doing today?
We're fine. What's up?
Hey, Amos, I have a question for the chief. You know, I walk about traveling through downtown area right there between Meridian and Pennsylvania, and I understand that bus stop there can be kind of a challenging bus stop. But my question is this. Why is there every day 11 to 14 police cars sitting there patrolling that area where all the Caucasian officers that's taking taxpayers' dollars? They're not even out patrolling the area. All of them just sit in the car. Some has one in it, some has two in it, and it's 11 to 14 cars. I counted them several times.
At the bus stop on Ohio between Meridian and Pennsylvania, right?
Why does it take so many?
Well, here's what we have. We have a problem at the federal building. There was ongoing drug dealing, drug trafficking. There
at
was
the
gambling
bus stop.
At the bus stop. Which you may have seen with a pre-raid kind of a situation, because we've oftentimes had to hit the area to take multiple people off at the same time. At the same time, there's a couple construction sites along that stretch, too, that the officers have been working off-duty, part-time in those areas. So either one of the two. But most of the time, if they're going to hit that area, they're planning to hit that area. A lot of times, we've had to make multiple arrests to send a message at that bus stop. It's kind of like insulting to have justice meted out in a federal courthouse, and we have people who are brazenly selling drugs and dealing with wares outside of that same federal courthouse.
All right, great question. Speaking of bus stops in downtown, last 4th of July, we had a wilding incident with roving bands of young people having fights, scaring legislators to death, moving from, the mall over towards Capitol, moving back toward the other bus stop on Ohio. 4th of July is a week from today. The fireworks. Will the police presence be beefed up downtown?
Absolutely. And we're simply talking about the incident of Marquise Edwards and the shooting occurred in Meridian.
Right. It was also 4th of July.
At the Illinois. What we're concerned about this, there has to be understanding, folks. Listen to the chief for a minute. We appreciate you coming downtown, but coming in spirit of peace. Mm-hmm. Don't embarrass yourselves, your family, and the city. Leave your fireworks at home. We have ample fireworks coming off of Regions, as always. It's very, 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 very professionally done. It's a good sight to see. We don't need you to have your individual parties. Well, we had with a few.
Wait, people coming downtown and shooting off the fireworks that they bought from the fireworks store downtown instead of at their backyard in their house.
That's what started the stampede. The Roman candles, the fireworks, the, you know, the rockets, all the, and all it takes is one or two to start this whole thing. That's unacceptable. That is a that is definitely a challenge for public safety, and that's a public safety risk. And we have to say we have to have a zero tolerance policy about that. You can't have the private parties on the parking lot because what comes up, what goes up, comes down. You can't. The Roman candles are made to hold your hand and point in the air. You don't point it down the sidewalk, Amos. Mm. And what we're seeing is people, innocent people, hair was getting caught in fire. People were panicking. It was just uncalled for. Well, now you know we think it's funny, but people get hurt and end up going to hospital behind
Before
us.
We take a break, I have not heard all year of any, and this could happen again tonight or tomorrow, so I'm, be careful what I say, but we have not heard of any problems downtown with young people at the mall.
We have been working tirelessly to build a relationship with those young people. Those who are banned on the list, those who were kind of thrown out of the mall, we've negotiated some cases for them to come back. But we also had a conversation because we went to the neighborhoods where they came out of and talked to some of their parents and done some knocking talks. Some we talked to public housing about some of the residents whose children were coming downtown, coming in the spirit of peace. Mm-hmm. And there's some who right now are working in a Clean the Green program. There's some who are working in other programs who are trying to put together summer jobs. We know you don't always have a lot to do, but coming downtown, acting out in your community, period, is not what we want to see. So I think you're seeing the people are being responsible and respectful. Now, we have a few every now and then who push the limits and push boundaries, and kids are bounding all over the place. But we have to be the adults in the room.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments with the chief. Everybody want to talk to the chief? So we'll let you do it after these. Back with the chief and Anonymous. Hi there.
Hello, Chief Hyde. Hello, Amos and Chief Hyde.
Hi.
Hello, good sir. How are you?
Hey, there's a house that sits right there on 34th Street in Kenwood area. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going towards Crown Hill, it sits right there on the corner, right on the right-hand side.
Right.
Right there next to the house, there's a house that's vacant. Both of those houses are vacant. There's bushes that are, I'm 5'11". The bushes are probably 5'8". There's definitely something going on in that house at night. There's no street light, for one thing, right there on that street. So it's kind of a dangerous intersection anyway, and I don't understand why there's no light right there because, it's a pretty dark area right there. And I have called and complained about the vacancy of the house across the street from me. That the weeds are so tall, people go back there, they'll buy their drugs, they'll sit right there behind their house, shoot their dope, and then they'll come back out. You'll see them come back out later. I can sit right there on my porch and watch them. And I'm just wanting to know, what other steps can I take then to call and complain about the high weeds? And I never really see a police presence around that area to even tell them about what's going on over there. And I think somebody's probably squatting in that house too.
Well, a couple of things I want to talk to you off air about. Here's one I want you to do for me. If you can get a pen and paper or a pencil and paper and start jotting down the times you see in the activity so we can pinpoint exactly when we think they're operating. If you happen to look out of the window and quietly can see without being observed the tag numbers or of the vehicles and or the description of the persons involved. Mm-hmm. If you can see where they're dealing from, where they're dealing from their front pocket, back pocket, they're dealing from under a tree stump, they're dealing from inside the house, they're operating from out of the car, however they're doing their operation, if you can write that down information for, the more information we have, the better off we are in terms of identifying. But clothing description, any nicknames or any information that you may have would be helpful.
The other thing, I'm going to give you another name and a number, caller. This is for the neighborhood liaison for the city in your neighborhood.
Okay, that hold on a second, Amos. Let me get a piece of paper. Okay.
All right, go ahead. Betty Smith Beecher, and that last name is B-E-E-C-H-E-R.
What was the name again, Amy?
Betty Smith Beecher.
You said Benny?
Betty, like the Flintstones, yeah.
Okay, Betty, and what was the rest of it?
Smith Beecher.
Beecher.
Yep, and her number is 429.
Okay.
7806.
7806, and I can call her about the weeds.
You can call her about the abandoned house, the weeds that you was on. You talked to, told the chief about that on the radio with me, and she's good people. I know Betty. Betty's good people in the neighborhood liaison office, and see, she can get code, she can get code enforcement and some of them other folks, and then I want you to hold on and give Chris your information.
There you go.
Your name and a number where you can be reached during the day, okay?
I'll do that. Thank you.
All right. Let me go very quickly at 239-1310. Let me go to Average. Average, you got about a minute.
Yes, I do. How are you guys doing today? How are you doing, Mr. Chief of Police?
Fine. Hello, good, sir.
That's good. Well, my question is this. I was looking at the news last night. I just tuned into the radio station, so I'm not sure if this was already discussed. But one thing I saw on the news last night is that you're going to have a 24-hour SWAT team patrolling the neighborhoods. Now, seeing that SWAT, Special Weapons and Tactics, is more or less like a militarized police, I mean, and they're patrolling, or they are supposed to be patrolling, or rumor has it they're patrolling, or however you want to put it, they're patrolling these neighborhoods at all hours of the day and night. I know after certain hours, you can't kick people's doors in and search them, which that's usually what, if I'm not mistaken, what SWAT's used for, because you want to go after the drug houses and the people that are dealing dope inside of them. But my question is this. If you're going to have a 24-hour SWAT team that patrols neighborhoods, isn't that kind of violating people's constitutional rights?
All right,
let me go over it again. Let me explain a couple things to you. First of all, we're probably the only city in the country that doesn't have a full-time SWAT team. I don't know if you know that. We have a part-time SWAT team that we used to call up from where they were in the districts and respond to whatever crisis were in the community, high-risk warrants, combat situations, whatever it may be. We've also had 30 police action, police-involved shootings where people have actually fired on police and their community, and we've had 8 officers shot in the line of duty and 1 killed. So what we had in February, March, April was quite an influx of shots being fired in communities, and we saw the risk factors starting to grow. So what we merely did was ask the commanders, can we find a way to pull together a group of officers who are already working anyway in a full-time capacity? Why can't we have them work together as a team and attack some of these challenges in our area with high-risk warrants, et cetera, because of the fact these officers in patrol are not always having the numbers to be able to go out there and attack and identify those targets in those neighborhoods. So what you're finding is you're looking at officers who are going into high-risk warrants,
right,
going after homicide suspects, high-risk persons who are armed without the benefit of a SWAT team, full-time SWAT team. And that's what that's really about. Now, in between time, there are areas that we are concerned about because of the fact of the shots being fired historically over a 10-year period. We have identified areas through data analysis and intelligence policing, areas that we know for a fact that people have taken on the community and shot them and fired. In those areas where they have really merely just been in those areas just monitoring, shots have gone down over 50-75%.
All right, I appreciate the call. One final thing while I got you here, Chief. You've been a police officer for a number of years. And are there special things that you do when one of the men and women in blue, not when they retire after 30, 40 years, but they want to move on to other things, is there like a special kind of thing that you all do when a police officer leaves the department in good standing and in good terms?
Yeah, we do. As a matter of fact, we got a couple coming up next week. We're going to move.
It's like, are there like special words that you give?
It is, because I think the first thing is that the retirement badge or leaving the profession, you take the oath, but the oath takes you.
Mm-hmm.
That's first. The retirement badge is the hardest one to get.
Oh,
because you don't know, people don't know how many times you really came close to death. You don't even tell your family that.
Well, see, and the reason I bring this up is Chris over there.
Yeah.
Our Chris Moore.
Yeah.
Who has been, you know, the glue
the surrogate,
of this program.
The surrogate police.
Yeah, the surrogate police on this program. This is his last day here at AM 1310 The Light. He is moving on to bigger and better things. He's not retiring, so we don't have a retirement badge. We don't have the retirement microphone. But, you know, we are going to miss him.
Yeah, we are.
He has been an asset to everybody that we have had going back to Allison Hampton and Robert Woodson and I'm gonna start forgetting. I'm gonna start and Donna Shealy, who have been there, have done, and Liz Dixon have all done great things. And Chris, we thank you for your service. We thank you for a lot that you have done and a lot that you have brought to the program. You will be missed. And I think it's even appropriate that the man with the gold badge in blue is the last guest while you are here. Godspeed. God bless you. You and your family.
We have a token for him.
They got a token.
Yep, from the National Police Memorial. You have something that part of IMPD will go with you wherever you go, Chris.
All right, Chris, thank you. God bless you. That's it for today. Right. We'll do it all again Monday, same time, same station. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday live at 1.